Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. And of course, tomorrow will be history made in Washington, D.C., of course, as our 45th president will be sworn into office tomorrow at noon at the Capitol steps in Washington, D.C. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance, and you can find out more about our organization and the policy work that we do at our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance. Well, tonight we're going to have the Pastor's Roundtable as we're going to discuss the spiritual element of praying for our new president-elect and vice president-elect as they'll be sworn into office tomorrow, and it will be the passing of the torch. In fact, the oath of office that will be taken is read as this: I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God. Well, with me on the phone tonight is Pastor Throckmorton. He is actually in Washington, D.C., and also Pastor Al, who is a board member of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Also, he has his own radio program here on the station, Live with Pastor Al. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Welcome, Chris. Welcome. Glad to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us, and of course, this is an exciting time with many opportunities for conservatives, as the church did show up to vote this last November, as we encouraged them to do so. So much was at stake with religious liberties and the trend of the culture that was really averse to what the church's message is, and a lot of concern across the country. So people of faith really did show up. In fact, I'm seeing numbers of somewhere between 89% of evangelicals actually went out and voted. Pastor Throckmorton, your thoughts?
Well, this was a incredibly issues-driven campaign like never before, and evangelicals have watched their values erode over the years. They've watched their religious freedoms threatened. They have watched different people appointed to different positions that have taken away not only the values they hold, but sometimes threatened to totally transform the nation that they love. And so it was just enough. And the values that were affected by the outcome of this election were incredibly obvious, especially and foremost the Supreme Court and who would be appointed there. Not only that, the host of other appointees that we are seeing, which we're seeing now going through the process of being confirmed. This is about not just now, and I think everybody realized that. This isn't just about now, Chris. This is about the future of the church in America, about the future for our children and grandchildren. And the church said, that's it, that's enough. We've talked about it long enough. We're doing something, and they certainly did voice their opinion.
Well, we did talk to pastors across the state of Ohio leading up to the election, and I can say that they had great concern and consternation about what the direction of the country would be. In fact, many of them watching the courts with the Supreme Court decision last year of the Obergefell decision, the court taking the unprecedented action of legalizing homosexual marriage, of course, which can never be acknowledged by the Bible or Christianity or by God, yet the civil authorities, by way of the Supreme Court, seemed to create law with the Obergefell decision. And of course, what that meant, tying it to the 14th Amendment, would be the full complement of the Civil Rights Code, and we're going to be dealing with that for some time to come. Even with the aftermath of this election, which bodes well for the church, from the presidency and many of the appointments in administration, of course, the control by Republicans in both the House and the U.S. Senate, and many legislatures across the country, still, the federal courts are basically filled with 85% of liberal-leaning judges. That means Clinton appointees and Obama appointees load the court at 85% by most analysis. Pastor Al, you talked to a number of pastors as well who concerned express their concern. In fact, many of them said, I realize that my faith is running now counter with the culture. I might end up in jail, many of them said. Your thoughts?
Hey, you're absolutely right, Chris. And I think that is, as well, I think that that is one of the driving factors that got a lot of Christians and churches involved in this last election, because you and many of our listeners are aware that in the last two presidential elections, the previous two, I should say, many Christians just simply did not show up to vote. They just stayed home. And in this last election, I really do believe that Christians turned the tide. And I believe it's because Christians got involved. They began praying. They realized that, hey, if we do not get involved in the culture around us, if we do not go out and try to fulfill our biblical mandate of being salt and light in the world around us, we're going to lose those freedoms. We're going to lose those rights that our forefathers have purchased, often at the cost of their own treasure and blood. And so Christians got, I think, first on their knees and began confessing their sins, and just like the prayer conference down in Columbus prior to the election, which, of course, both of you gentlemen, I believe, were there. And, we saw Christians around the country on their knees praying for this country, praying for themselves, their selves and their families, and confessing sin. And then taking a step further, getting up and going out and getting involved, not just electing, going to the elections, but getting involved, talking with family and friends, talking at church, and rallying people, because this was, I think, one of the greatest threats to our Christian freedom that we've seen in my lifetime. Had Hillary Clinton been elected, it was very much of the opinion that she would have moved quickly to stomp down on many of the Christian freedoms that were already seemed to be shrinking under the Obama years. And remember, she said that if you don't agree with their views on same-sex marriage, I believe it was, that churches have to change their beliefs. What a difference.
That's right. Well, that was so alarming to hear that from a major politician like Hillary Clinton. And of course, the Bible really encourages us that it's not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord. And Pastor Throckmorton, Christians really did join together, intercede, and they prayed through this year, as it was a really rocky road during the campaign season, and many challenges along the way. And people had to really put their thinking caps on spiritually as they considered what was in front of them and the choices that were in front of them. And your thoughts on that as far as Christians approaching this election with a lot of prayer and spiritual discernment?
I've not seen it in my lifetime, Chris. The call to prayer that went out in the churches for events. And, we just mentioned an event there in Columbus, but there were events all over the state. And not only were there events where we just came together and prayed, but we prayed specifically. We prayed for leaders in every facet of government. We prayed for specifically for the next leader of our country. We prayed for the pastors to have boldness and freedom and courage to stand in the pulpits and not only call for their people to engage culturally and register to vote, but get out and vote. And they were speaking on the issues, as Pastor Al mentioned. We understood this. We understood the ramifications, not just for now, but for years to come. And so this was an unprecedented time, and every one of us, I think, understood that those who follow us, our grandchildren, would have a reason to judge us, a reason to hold us accountable for what we do or don't do or didn't do in this season of election.
Well, that's right. And, of course, we want people to continue to pray. In fact, as we head in tomorrow, the inauguration itself, there's been a lot of planned protest and even threats against the president-elect and the vice president-elect and of tomorrow's ceremony. And we don't know how to take that very seriously. But at the same time, I think that we need to, what can we do? Well, we can pray. We can intercede. We didn't get this thing by any imagination or strength of our own or any ingeniousness of our own. God brought about this victory for the church. And I really do believe that it's going to bode well with public policy going forward to protect the unborn, protect religious liberty, advance the cause of decency in our culture, in our nation. But we have to really forge this in prayer, folks. And that's why we want you to encourage you, really, for the next 24 hours, join with us in praying for Washington, praying for our country, praying for the proceedings. Because undoubtedly, there's still a lot of division that exists within our country. There are those who are very disappointed that their candidate did not win. They're sulking about it. They don't take a spiritual angle to it. And there is a carnality. There is a division, even contention and strife. But what do, Christians? We need to pray. We need to intercede. Pastor Throckmorton, you're there in Washington, D.C. We're going to be praying for all those that are gathering to participate in the inauguration. Tell us your thoughts as you go into tomorrow. Pastor Tim, you still with us?
I'm in D.C., and I'm actually headed to a meeting, and so I tried to have the phone on mute there as a fire truck went by.
Well, there's a lot of activity, we know, and so tell us your thoughts as we go in tomorrow, and of course, we're going to be praying for all of the observances. In fact, we understand that Donald Trump and Vice President-elect Pence actually went to Arlington Cemetery. They laid a wreath about an hour ago in observance of the veterans, and then, of course, there are prayer gatherings that are part of the a ceremony. And then, of course, he will stay the night at Blair House, which is across the street from the White House. It is tradition. And then, of course, as he makes his way up to Capitol Hill for what is basically the passing of the torch, as he will be sworn into office at noon. Tell us your thoughts as the festivities are ensuing there in Washington.
Well, unique opportunity earlier today to go to a prayer event close to the Capitol where a number of legislators were there. Michelle Bachmann, Trent Franks prayed passionately. There was specific prayer for our newly elected president. James Robison shared with us some specific ways that we could pray. You know, the unique thing, Chris, in my lifetime, I've never seen a candidate that has surrounded himself with spiritual leaders, evangelical leaders. And that's what is happening here. This is an amazing thing. And not only that, we know the character of Governor Mike Pence and his influence on the president-elect as well. And so specific prayer for them, for their families, and for their cabinet appointees. This is a incredible day in regard to the cabinet. I've never seen that great number of believers in a cabinet for a president in my lifetime.
Yes.
So they need prayer. And they're going to be fought absolutely tooth and nail from daylight to dark. And so there's an incredible battle going on, a spiritual battle that's happening. And not to mention the press and other entities that are going to fight them as well. So we have all of this to consider as we pray for President Trump and Vice President Pence and their families.
Well, that's right. And it's going to be a wonderful transition of power. You know, when we think about our first president, George Washington, of course, the commander of the Continental Army, and of course, the victory there at Yorktown, and of course, the surrender of Cornwallis, and then when the new government was being formed and he was elected as the first president, and his vice president was John Adams. And at the end of his term, he stepped down, gave his departing address, and when the King of England, King George, heard of it, that he was leaving the seat of the presidency and turning it over, he said, if he does that, he truly will be the greatest man in the world. Because prior to, we'd only been used to monarchies and strong power in central government, never a government of the people, for the people, by the people. And our first executive proved that by serving two terms and then retiring to private life. And we've continued this tradition, the peaceful transition of power. It will happen again tomorrow in Washington, really for the national stage and the international stage as the world watches again as the peaceful transition of power takes place. And of course, we would defend the rights of those who are have a differing opinion and they peacefully protest. We believe in our First Amendment. Pastor Al, do we not?
Oh, absolutely, or we wouldn't even be able to be on the radio right now, would we?
But that's right.
Think about that. You know, you probably remember the expression, it's slipping my mind right now, but basically there was an expression that had to do with whatever the will of the king was, is what you're, you know, was limited what you could say. And that's another thing that really set our country apart, even before the Constitution was put in place, which of course happened after, you know, the Revolutionary War. But this appreciation that we have, this value that we have in this country on freedom of expression, and what most people forget oftentimes is that very freedom of expression, free speech and all of that that we have in the First Amendment is all really contingent, if you read it correctly, on the freedom of religion that we have. And, you know, I think that to the fact that we've been able to speak out, and obviously, those of us that have been speaking out against Hillary on the radio, we've not been censored. We've not been told you can't say that. Mm-hmm. Many countries in the world today, if you did that, if you spoke out against the ruling party, you'd find yourself in jail. You'd find yourself in the graveyard. You know, your family members would be getting the price of the bullet, you know, to ask for reimbursement. And that's something that I think we as Americans fail to appreciate. You travel outside of America, and they really marvel at how much we are able in this country to speak against people who are in power that we don't agree with. And that, I think, also is how we've been able to rally Christians to help them to see what the issues are in regards to this election. And I'm just thankful that Christians got out, got involved, and voted. And my biggest fear is that we'll stop praying now that we've, you know, achieved our goal. We stop praying. No, we need to keep praying even more.
We need to take the admonishment of Reverend Falwell, Jerry Falwell. He passed away a few years ago, but he used to say that, well, our folks show up and they'll vote and they win and they go home, or they voted, they show up, they vote and they lose and they go home. The problem was they went home instead of
right.
Staying engaged. Pastor Throckmorton, it's important that we stay engaged along the way, because politicians and office holders who really need our support when they're doing right, and they need our admonishment or advice when they're stepping out of line. Your thoughts?
Well, yes, and that's just not on a national level, it's on a state level as well. And we know here in Ohio with the heartbeat bill and other bills that, you know, we need to be vigilant about this. We not only that, we need to encourage our people to participate and run for office and serve.
Yeah,
because we need that Christian influence, that biblical worldview influence in every realm of government. And the Bible's clear, when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. And that's not just the higher positions in government. That's every position in government. And we have the ability here in this nation, and I appreciate, you know, Pastor Al drawing that picture for us. You know, we have in our nation the freedom to do things other nations don't. May we never forget that. Because if we do, it may not be us, but it may be our children and grandchildren to pay the price and lose that freedom. And so we are blessed to do this, and we need to stay on our knees in prayer. We need to stay engaged culturally, and we need to stay engaged just in a practical sense as far as serving and supporting those who do serve.
That's right. And there's been so much that has been said about what will be the first 100 days in the new administration. We do need to be praying. And folks, I ask you to commit to praying for the new president-elect, Donald Trump, and Vice President Mike Pence, our new Congress, and to pray for them as they move forward on a very aggressive agenda. Last week on the program, we had Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District talking about the very encouraging atmosphere in Congress and what they intend to do very quickly to get to work. I like the idea that our president-elect, he's going to get to work right away. In fact, we might want to talk about the first 100 hours because he's going to rescind a lot of presidential actions that President Obama put forward, and he's going to rescind them. And I think that's going to be a big day on day one, but also the new administration, the first 100 days, there's a lot we can see that gets done. Pastor Throckmorton, what would you like to see happen right away in the first stretch of the new administration?
Amen, Chris. I appreciate your perspective, and I appreciate your willingness to step out as well and be involved. When we have a nation that God has handed us and freedom that God's trusted us, it's like anything that we are stewards of. If we're good stewards, then God will bless. But if we're bad stewards, and that's whether it's our physical possessions or our responsibilities in a nation, we can be good or bad stewards of that as well.
And well, that's right.
So pray for those who are going to probably do some drastic things and take some steps that haven't been taken before. And our courage and our prayers will help them to stand even stronger in the midst of the criticism they're absolutely, absolutely going to get.
Well, that's right. I think we're going to see a very aggressive legislative calendar in the new Congress with the repeal of Obamacare, with the drawing back of some of the regulations on business, and, of course, legislation that will go a long way to protect religious liberties in this country. One of the things that the president-elect campaigned on was getting rid of the Johnson Amendment that restricts churches from speaking from the pulpit politically. That was enacted back in the 60s, and I think we might see that rescinded very quickly. What's your thoughts?
That's my prayer.
Who's up here, Chris? I'm sorry.
Pastor Al. Al.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you were talking about that things in the first 100 days. Obviously, the Johnson Amendment, getting rid of that, it would be one of my top things. Also, moving, in regards to defunding Planned Parenthood, I think would be another thing. On the foreign side of things, one of my top things I'd like to see them follow through with is, I believe, during the George W. Bush administration, the Congress passed a resolution of some sort to allow the embassy in Tel Aviv, Israel, to move to Jerusalem. And, of course,
right.
President-elect Trump has said that he would do that, and his choice for ambassador to Israel has said that. I'd like to see them do that because on the foreign front, I think that would show strong leadership, a willing to stand by our strongest ally in the Middle East, one of the strongest allies we have in the world. And I also think it would send a message to the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, all these other Islamic jihadist groups that want to overthrow our country and destroy Israel as well. I think that would send a strong message there. And that also goes along with the biblical statement of God will bless those that bless Israel. And I think that also helps walk back President Obama having our ambassador to the UN refuse to veto that horrible resolution there at the end of December.
That's right. Well, that's right. And we're going to see a lot that goes on in Congress that will be very encouraging, I think, to Christians across the board. And, of course, we'll have an attorney general that will be working on our behalf instead of working adversely to interest of religious liberty in the church. Well, we have so much to talk about, gentlemen, but we've run out of time. Pastor Throckmorton, you enjoy your time at the inaugural festivities, my friend. The Lord bless you, and we'll be praying for all of you that are gathered in Washington, and we're going to be interceding and praying. And, of course, just for those that are listening, the Pastor's Protection Act will be reintroduced here at the Ohio State House. I met with Speaker Rosenberger yesterday. We presented him with a framed copy of the Ten Commandments, and he tells me it will be a very quick set of hearings in the month of February. So that's good news, and we'll keep everybody posted on that. But we'll have to have you both back on the program. Thank you for joining us today again, Pastor Throckmorton and Pastor Al. God bless you both.
Thank you, Chris. God bless.
Thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate the good work, sir. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, folks, we'll take a quick break, and on the other side, we'll be joined by Congressman Bill Johnson, who will be telling us the details of what Congress has in mind to get to work right away in the new General Assembly. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Those serving in our military, they're the difference makers. Separated from family, enduring hardships far from home, sacrificing for their country while serving in a different country. Well, for those of us who support our armed forces through the USO, we get to make a difference too. Through the USO, we get to be the force that delivers the phone call between spouse and deployed service member. The force that brings newborn and new parent together through a delivery room video chat. And the force that makes sure our military serving 7,000 miles away gets to watch the big game from a USO center. We get to be the force behind the forces, connecting them to every comfort of family, home, and country possible. It's a good feeling to make a difference. Visit uso.org/force to learn how you can be the force behind the forces.
Well, tonight we're going to talk about the new Congress that was sworn in on Tuesday of this week, and also the Ohio General Assembly, also the 132nd General Assembly at the state capitol sworn in on Tuesday as well, as many new members were sworn in on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and also in Columbus. And this is the oath of office that congressional members take. I do solemnly swear, affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me God. And that is the congressional oath of office that the members took on Tuesday of this week. And with us on the phone is our good friend from the 6th District, Congressional District here in Ohio, and no stranger to News and Focus, Bill Johnson. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. It's good to be with you. And you know, that oath of office has a very, very deep meaning to me, because I not only took it multiple times, it's the same oath, essentially, that officers in the military take. So I took it each and every time that I was promoted or reenlisted. And I administered that oath of office to many of our young, brave troops that serve on the front lines every day to keep us free. So I have it memorized, if that means anything.
It sure does. And of course, we thank you for your military service over the years, and of course, now as a member of the United States Congress, and again, reelected this last November for another term, representing the fine people of the 6th Congressional District of Ohio. And I know that they're pleased that you're returning to Washington, and I know that you're chomping at the bit, because now we really have an opportunity. We've been waiting for this for some time. Over the last 8 years of the failed policies of Barack Obama and the Democratic policies, really, which failed in their mission, Mr. Obama came to office saying that there was time for hope and change. and that he had his vision of what he thought the country ought to do. But quite honestly, 8 years later, we are really in a world of hurt on a number of fronts. But the good news is the cavalry has showed up, because we not only have the Republicans that are controlling the U.S. House of Representatives, they're controlling the U.S. Senate, and now, for the first time in 8 years, controlling the presidency with the election of Donald J. Trump and Mike Pence as the 45th president and vice president elect. Your thoughts?
I think it's a time for extreme optimism, Chris. The excitement and the energy here in the House of Representatives about what we're going to be able to do, I can tell you. In fact, going on the House floor right now is debate on a bill called the RAINS Act. RAIN is an acronym. It stands for Regulations by the Executive in Need of Scrutiny. We have tried to pass the RAINS Act or get it signed into law numerous times over the last 6 years to reel in some of the onerous regulations that are strangling businesses and industries across our country, particularly industries like coal and oil and gas and manufacturing. And we've been very unsuccessful because we couldn't get a president that would sign it. Now we've got a Senate that will pass it, a president that will sign it. And so now we're going to be able to restore the voice of the American people in the rulemaking process, because under that act, any rule that cost our economy more than $100 million a year is going to have an up or down vote by the U.S. House of Representatives before that federal agency can implement that rule. It's a big, big day. And there are many other such activities going on as we speak.
Well, that's right, and there is a lot of optimism by members of both the House and Senate to move an agenda very quickly. And, of course, yesterday we heard big news by Obamacare is on the chopping block, and Congress is going to get to work right away for the repeal and replacement of Obamacare. And the new president-elect and Congress is going to pull together the best minds to put together a way forward and leaving in the rear view Obamacare, which, by the way, is failing. It's failing on so many levels. The exchanges aren't working. Obamacare itself is lopsided as to those who sign up and the obligations, people being penalized for not buying health insurance. I mean, you know, this is we never thought we'd see this day come in our country. And so there were so many problems. Premiums, of course, have skyrocketed with Obamacare failing. And so it's a great day to know that we're moving forward. Of course, here in Ohio, we made our mark by passing a health care freedom amendment a few years ago, in which the U.S. Supreme Court essentially struck down. It was to challenge Obamacare. And in a second decision, in a narrow 5-4 vote, I believe, Obamacare was upheld again with the subsidies. But all that will be in the past now, as Congress will take on a very big task, obviously, in dismantling Obamacare and replacing it. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. And I want to make sure that we have a very clear understanding of what that means, Chris. The president-elect and vice president-elect, Mr. Trump and Governor Pence, they are absolutely committed to this. They campaigned on it, and they are committed to do it. The members of the Republican members of the House and the Senate are committed to do it. But I want to take just a brief moment and make sure that our people, the people that are going to be impacted the most by this, understand what this actually looks like and what it will mean. The law, the Affordable Care Act, that was jammed down the American people's throat, that put health care in the hands of bureaucrats and took it out of the hands of patients and their doctors, the law that actually did the things that you just talked about resulted in soaring premiums and deductibles, healthcare professionals that have left the industry, market collapses of in the insurance industry. All of those negative impacts, just absolutely skyrocketing healthcare costs. All of those things have been in place now since 2010. And industries have reshaped and reformed and tried their best to negotiate this this maze of bureaucratic complexity that resulted in the Affordable Care Act. Now, we can repeal the Affordable Care Act through a process called reconciliation. We can eliminate the fiscal aspects of the law, the employer mandate, the individual mandate, and some of the fines and penalties and those kinds of things. We can do that under a process called reconciliation because you only have to have 51 votes in the Senate to be able to pass that. But all of the rules and regulations that have gone into effect that implemented Obamacare, those are now built into the law of the land. And to replace those and return health care to patients and their doctors and lower cost and lower premiums, et cetera, Chris, that's going to take some time.
Right.
The last thing that the American people wants Congress to do is to have another 3,000-page piece of legislation that's introduced at midnight, voted on at 2 o'clock in the morning, and has unintended consequences that just blow our healthcare system out of the water. Because people have responded to this system, and we've now got to be careful that that we do no harm, that we don't make matters worse. So I just want to make sure that all of our listeners understand the implications of a statement that you made, that our president and our president, vice president-elect, they and the administration are going to have a big say-so in what this new healthcare system looks like. So I don't want anybody to think that on January 20th, that Obamacare is going to be completely reformed, because it's just not going to happen.
Right. And I appreciate you saying that, Congressman, because there is so much complexity to it, because it wasn't, it took over, what was it, one-fifth of the federal government?
One-sixth of our economy.
One-sixth of our economy.
Yeah.
So that is one major task, and one in which we'll be praying for you, your colleagues in both the House and the Senate and the president-elect.
Yeah.
And I know that he's going to receive a lot of good instruction. You know, there was a lot of good models that were out there that were basically pushed to the side.
There's a lot of good
ideas of portability across state lines. If we had had that in the past, it would have made for competitive pricing for insurance policies. So there's so many options that are for people going forward, and it will take some time. And so it will be very exciting to see, of course, with some of the initial things. What do you expect to happen, though, right out of the gate that will change? What about the employer mandate? Will that be
right out of the gate? Here's what's going to happen, or at least here's the plan for what's going to happen right now. The Senate has already introduced and is in the debate stages of a budget resolution. For us to execute the process of budget reconciliation, which is a very, very specific legislative process with a very, very rigid and defined set of rules that go along with it. And it has to meet a certain set of criteria. And that criteria is determined whether a reconciliation bill qualifies is determined by the parliamentarian in the Senate. They have a set of guidelines, a set of questions that have been in the law for years that deal with reconciliation, and they have to go through and make sure that the reconciliation bill meets the parameters of those, the criteria of the law. Now, before you can get to reconciliation, you must have a budget resolution pass the House and a budget resolution pass the Senate. The Senate has already introduced theirs. They are in the debate stages, and we expect that the Senate's budget resolution will be finalized sometime next week. We in the House are currently working on our budget resolution. Now, no one should be deceived. This is a transitional procedural vehicle so that we can get to budget reconciliation, so that we can take the same, essentially the same bill, Chris, the same bill that defunded the employer mandate, that defunded Obamacare, that defunded the individual mandate, and that defunded Planned Parenthood, that was put on the president's desk last year. You remember the bill that was vetoed?
We talked about that, yes.
That's right. That's essentially the same bill, for the most part, that's going to show up on Donald Trump's desk on January 20th.
Mm.
And so for us to do that, we're going to have to pass a budget resolution in the House. Now, that does not mean that we can't come back. In fact, we will. In March and April, we will be coming back again and passing another budget resolution for the 2018 and 10-year period beyond that. Okay?
Yes.
So there's a lot of work to be done, and we've got a lot of informing and educating and making sure that the people we represent know that this initial budget resolution that's going to come out of the House and the Senate is a procedural legislative tactic that will enable us, under the law, to execute budget reconciliation to put a repeal of Obamacare, a repeal of the employer and individual mandate, and a defunding of Planned Parenthood on then President Trump's desk on January 20th.
Oh, that's exciting, Congressman. And again, you know, these are things that we were just dreaming about for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
To actually be able to do these things and now to have them a reality. And again, for Congress, and I want to commend Congress for getting to work so quickly. I know I spoke with Jim Renacci, and he said, look, I'm going to be in Washington on Monday, and that was the federal holiday. He said, we're getting right at it on Tuesday, and of course, the swearing in, and you're right on top of it. So you're saying the president-elect that afternoon, and by the way, I really like his attitude. He's wanting to get to work right away, rolling up his sleeves. In fact, you know, people have asked me about inauguration activities, and of course there'll be an inauguration, the swearing in and the mall and a parade and, you know, inaugural balls and receptions, those kinds of things, but very much scaled down from years past. And, you know, I think that's okay. I mean, I attended in 2004, had the privilege of attending a few receptions, an inaugural ball and the inauguration itself, and it was very, very nice. And
they're going to be tremendously scaled down, Chris. Let me give you an example. And don't quote me on these numbers, but these are orders of magnitude, so you and our listeners will understand. I believe in 2008 and 12, when Barack Obama was elected, there were something on the order of 9+ inaugural balls.
Right.
Donald Trump and Vice President Pence are going to attend 3 activities.
And one of them is a military ball for the military only. And I think that's awesome. I think that's great.
And the parade that usually goes for hours
right,
is only going to last 90 minutes.
I think that's great. And I've been to the parade route as well back in 2000. I took my kids down there. We went to the mall. Of course, we nearly froze. It was a cold rain that turned into a snow, and we got out of Dodge that day. And we're up in the mountains. And, of course, they don't know anything about when they get a half a foot of snow. There's no plows or anything, so we got stuck up in the mountains that night in the car. But it was exciting for them. That was back in 2000 with George Bush's first term. But
my perception is that President-elect Trump and Vice President-elect Pence are wanting to postpone the celebration until something's actually done.
Amen to that.
They want to roll up their sleeves, put on their work boots, and get to the office and begin to sign executive orders that will roll back executive orders and onerous regulations that are possible under executive order from the Obama administration. Sign this this budget reconciliation package that will repeal Obamacare, and then will give us the starting point to begin the really, really hard work of redoing, reforming, restructuring the healthcare policies in this country to get bureaucrats out of the healthcare business and put healthcare decisions back in the hands of patients and their doctors, without doing harm to millions of Americans who've had to now respond to this debacle of a law.
That's right. We're talking with Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District. We're talking about the opening session of the 115th Congress and how they were getting ready to roll up their sleeves and get to work with the new president-elect, Donald J. Trump. And we're just days away from his inauguration, which will be a scaled-down version.
Yeah.
Well, Congressman, we just have a few more minutes with you. And I want to ask you, because you come on this program with Bob Murray and Jim Martin and Pat Boone, and we do the roundtable discussions on the war on coal and the EPA regs. Give us an update. Now, things are looking more promising for coal and for energy policy going forward. Give us your thoughts on that.
They are. And let me give you two data points. Number one, as you know, at the end of the year, December 16th, the Interior Department, the Obama administration, published their rule called the Stream Protection Rule. It is a devastating rule to the coal industry. You and Bob Murray and I have talked about that over the last 6 years a number of times. In spite of our best efforts, the Obama administration went ahead and published that rule. But in reality, Chris, they may have given us a great Christmas gift at the same time, because someone did not calculate the law known as the Congressional Review Act. Under the Congressional Review Act, Congress can set aside a rule that within a certain period of time, Congress has to be in session for 20 legislative days in order to be able to do so consistently. But we can set aside that rule, and here's the key point. That rule can never, ever, nothing like it, nothing similar to it, can ever be advanced by any future administration once the president signs a Congressional Review Act doing away with the rule. We've got the commitment of the majority leader in the Senate. We've got the commitment of the Speaker of the House. And the President of the United States at that time, Donald Trump, has committed to signing that Congressional Review Act. I'll be the one introducing it here in the House, and along with my colleague David McKinley from West Virginia, and we will do away with this Stream Protection Rule forever.
Awesome.
Now point number two. One of our colleagues, a great supporter of the coal industry, Ryan Zinke from Montana, former Navy SEAL, has been selected as Trump's nomination to head up the office of the Department of the Interior. So I can guarantee you that the Interior Department and the Office of Surface Mining and Reclamation, the Bureau of Land Management, all of those agencies that come under the Interior Department, there's a new sheriff in town, and they will be taking a different, more positive view of the use of coal in America's energy profile.
Oh, that is so good to hear. And, you know, Mr. Murray has been almost standing alone in this war on coal, and there's been coal mining operations that have gone bankrupt and closed down during these years, and for no good reason. I mean, these were good-paying Ohio jobs. These were families. These were a way in which we could affordably keep the lights on here in the Midwest, and with this wonderful resource that God has given to us, only to have that being taken off the table during the Obama EPA years. It's so good to know that things will be made right with the new Congress. Well, again, we're talking with Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District. Congressman, we're going to have you back on. We've got so much to talk about, but you've given us a great report today. Do know that our prayers and our thoughts are with you as you head into the work of the new Congress. God bless you, my friend.
God bless you, my friend. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you. And again, our thanks to Congressman Johnson for stopping in today and giving us that report on the new Congress in Washington. You're listening to News in Focus. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. God bless.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.